He considered ink the most precious commodity there was. It was the raw material that allowed free speech, from the manifestos that shredded the capitalist machine to the ads that drove the capitalist machine to new heights, as well as the cartoons that made everyone laugh after they had worked too hard, and the artwork that made everyone feel man was worth saving, life worth living, and the job worth doing. He loved ink, his job. Well, it was his business. He was the owner. Also, he loved the colors, all of them to some degree, and some of them to a great degree. During the later days, the colors and the types of material he printed had blurred. Red with blue, advertising with news, and then grotesquely yellow with green, sermons with annual reports. His admiration and appreciation for ink diminished as the colors bled into each other. Posters, books, flyers, packages, magazines, billboards, postcards, calendars, bumper stickers. Even napkins began to look murky. Luckily, the ink supply ended, and he was not forced to print the final admixtures. She liked being out and about a lot and couldn't understand the agoraphobics one bit. As a matter of fact, she often left home early-ish, like around 9, and didn't return until dinner, which seasonally floated with the sun's clock. She didn't work because it wasn't required of her. Two occupations filled her and her day, reading and shopping. Usually, meaning always, she would head to the library and either pick up where she left off yesterday or randomly headed for another aisle, shelf, Dewey Decimal. Usually, i.e. always, she ended up trapped in some book on the floor in some uncomfortable position until her numbness began to hurt. Semi-consciously, she would move her body to a chair and read until hunger won. Her reading matter would directly influence her lunch and her afternoon purchases. Romantic novels whet her appetite for old-world food. Scones, roast beef, puddings, potatoes, sausages, and the like. And then shops with bedding, lingerie, and scented sachets. That's an example of her thinking, conjunctive, fluid, almost linear. During the last months before the first incidents, she tended to connect her mornings less and less with her afternoons. If you asked her why, she would have been surprised that any connection had ever existed between her AMs and her PMs, and that you had bothered to notice. After more thought, she would have remarked on another coincidental shift. Many shops were closing early or going out of business entirely at the same time that there were fewer books on the library shelves. Therefore, making segues from her mornings to her afternoons was automatically becoming a greater stretch. She assumed that everyone was undergoing the same tension, one that ended once the shops were empty. She sold fresh flowers from a cart in the center of town for years. A job she didn't love, but the people, the variety, and beauty made it better than any office work. She had considered herself alert until the first morning when the wholesaler forcibly handed her synthetic flowers instead of the glorious, precious, live ones from hothouses out of town. She felt a quick spasm of an ethical dilemma. To sell man-made nature or not. Unable to choose, she took an assortment, headed to the square where they decided for her. Their faces said much more than no thank you. Some people understood the missing flowers meant that the countryside had already evaporated. By the following morning, she had already found an office job. During the worst of it, she worked underground in a sub-basement where floral wallpaper and nature calendars almost sustained her. He sold flowers, too, but far to the north where life didn't collapse completely. But the economy didn't support his operation more than one day a week. So he picked up other work, growing and selling vegetables, mulching materials for other gardeners, repairing wheelbarrows and tools and supplying used parts, lots of handles, etc. During the winters and nights, he studied secret codes and the accordion. During the day, while he was gardening, etc., he began making up songs which he wrote down at night and eventually accompanied himself on the accordion. Work songs expanded to love, peace, travel, and many fantasies about the ending. How, when, why, to whose advantage, where? Was this horrible enough that they'd never do it again? Odd material for songs, but thoughts everyone had and couldn't say, Anne sang freely years later. She wondered how long she'd be able to take it. Her grown daughter and son had already been removed from circulation. She had lost all contact with her former husband, so that left only casual friends and neighbors. At the library, there were many people she had seen weekly for decades, most of whom she felt some form of warmth for, yet knew little about their lives outside of their reading preferences and mostly forgotten subjects of their chit-chat. Maybe some of them had more substance than she initially imagined, because they all, being readers, had seen it coming and had even discussed it at the checkout desk. Things, meaning books, titles, kept disappearing from the obvious political to the subtle abstract. The logic bypassed her, so she was never able to save any of the books. But her books, ones that she had authored, were missing one day, the day she assumed to be her next to last. Instead of jumping or panicking or swallowing, she quietly packed a few items, jewelry, her current manuscript, and some cash, in her largest purse and walked to the train station. She looked over the list of destinations and took the one heading the farthest. As the train was leaving, her heart's rhythm started to match the train's, but it calmed. She calmed it by talking logic to it so successfully that they didn't even bother her at the border. Several of her novels were based on her decision that day. Lots of people tried to turn the tide. Several people made huge efforts long after the backwater brine emitted a stench. He was one of them. He kept up a smile, made jokes, bought a daily boutonniere, wished everyone well, let other drivers pass ahead, held doors open, etc., while still seeking shelters for the new refugees. He spent his days fundraising, bargaining, bartering, begging for public housing from landowners, politicians, city officials, bank managers, even the army. He approached from every angle. What if they were your mother, father, sister, son, daughter, brother? Usually eyes averted then, exits appeared and or shoulders shrugged. He would leave and wish them good something and go drive by the sea. After numerous deep breaths, absorbing the great Pacific, he would manage to restore his hope, even enthusiasm, but not without muttering. What happened to people, the hoi polloi, the riffraff, the scuttlebugs, the motherfuckers, the untouchables and the Brahmin alike, the samurai, the blue bloods and the Crips and the right reverends, etc., on and on until the sea calmed him. After he had asked the last beings for help, and they had refused, he drove right onto a ferry boat, where he got one more idea, the penitentiary. She objected privately to her friends, and then publicly in demonstrations, and then was never seen again. Her tiny apartment was left as it was, because her parents were never able to get free to empty it. Her friends were too frightened to be associated, and her neighbors either didn't care or knew enough to stay away. The landlord tried to re-rent the place for years throughout the tribulations, and therefore dusted, swept, and aired it whenever anyone was inquiring. He supplied different stories for each of them about the current tenant. At first, he made the mistake of developing elaborate tales about which they would inquire further to the disadvantage of the apartment. Later on, even the blandest account would incite too many questions. The apartment was decorated so cozily. The books were curious, though, either radical or romantic. A lot of the tchotchkes, clothes, and kitchenware were very petite, implying someone that everyone wanted to meet and that was never available for reasons that did not correspond to the original story. Eventually, even the landlord liked spending time there. The poetry sent the biggest chills, and the tea at sunset proved the most comforting. Mornings were the closest to normal, except the phone never rang. By early afternoon, things would start happening. Sounds, flashes, dark and light, out of the corner, smells with no cooking, and tingling sensations, usually on the inner side of her elbow and the back of the knee. The landlord had rented to her merely 3 months before she disappeared, yet had already ascertained that she would be noticed, elevated, rewarded, so sweet yet so firm. Maybe they had her writing poetry for the troops, or observing cultural changes for the history books, or just coloring maps of the shifting fronts. You can't arrest someone over spilled milk, he liked to say, which he was luckily able to say for many more years, because he wondered without asking, sensed without deducing, noticed without saying that you can be arrested over spilled anything.